Hello and welcome to A Pilot Cthulhu Behind the Bar. We have a lovely interview for you today. Myself and Jay are hosting this one. And we are interviewing Tim Molloy, the absolute genius behind the artwork of The Painted Wastelands and many other different things. Tim, would you like to say hello?
Yes, hello. Thanks so much for having me.
Yeah, you're welcome. Off you go,
Jay. Start you off with the easy one. If Cthulhu was a drink, what would it be?
Oh, okay. If Cthulhu was a drink, what would it be? You ask this to everybody?
Yep. We get salt water and whiskey, salmon flavored vodka.
I didn't do my goddamn research. I'm so sorry.
No, it's refreshing. Refreshing not to have people know the questions.
Yeah. Well, there you go. Sorry, I'm fucking under the pump, guys. Oh, I'm pardon
yes,
me.
Yes.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Am I allowed to swear? Yeah, no issue there.
I just assume. Cthulhu would be some sort of, I'd call it the cosmic brine. It'd have to be a cocktail. I can't think of anything. Something really, really poisonous, but for the moment, I think the first sip of whatever it is would be very, very, very intoxicating. But I think by the time you got to the end of it, you wouldn't know yourself anymore. Oh. Let's call it the Starry Eye.
Added to the list.
I like the sound of that. Yeah, added to the list if you can work out how to make that.
I'll figure something out, I'm sure.
So, tell us a bit about yourself then, Tim.
I'm on my way to becoming an old man. I'm in my mid-40s now, which is really something. I think I'm saying that out loud for the first time. That's okay. I've been making art for a long time. I live in Australia now with my wife and son and too many cats. I come from New Zealand. I'm very into, I love the mythos and everything adjacent, I think, up and down the stack of weirdness. Yeah, I don't know. I've been making comics for a long time. I make watercolor paintings. I've been kind of a full-time artist since COVID, but kind of, you know, I've been hustling with the creative stuff since time immemorial. That's the short story.
Fair play.
Fair enough. So, how did you start in making art in general and then also making art for Painted Wastelands? Well, we know Painted Wastelands is
art
kind
in
of
general?
The art. The art kind of came first with that game, didn't it?
Yeah, well, so I've been making art just the whole time that I've been online with consciousness. You know, like everybody else, when we're all kids, we draw, and I'm just one of those people that just kept drawing. The stuff that the Painted Wastelands is, you know, comes from is really like a, you know, I've been making comics and paintings and art and stuff the whole time, but around in my early 20s, late teens, I started making stories and comics about various characters, but one in particular, a homeless necromancer named Mr. Unpronounceable. And I've just kind of been exploring my own kind of imaginary world in my art for about 25 years now, which is a weird thing to do, I think, sometimes when I think about it. But The Painted Wastelands is sort of, you know, Chris Willett, my partner in crime, approached me, I don't know how long ago it was now. It seems like it wasn't that long ago, a year and a bit. It's not 2 years. Approached me out of the blue, just sort of slid into my DMs, and, you know, he was like, oh, you know, I like the art that you're doing. I write, you know, tabletop role-playing games, and I'm wondering if you'd be open to me sort of stringing together some ideas around some of these images, and, you know, maybe we could collaborate. And I just immediately sent him, you know, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of pages of comics and, you know, treatments about, you know, TV shows that exist within the world and everything else. And he was like, okay, cool. Well, this makes my job easier. but he just immediately dived in to all of the stuff that I've been playing with for, you know, the better half of my life. Yeah, I don't really, it's sort of weird. It all happened very quickly. There was a period of time where I was like kind of handing over the keys to the kingdom to this guy, that he just kept impressing me with his sort of understanding, I suppose, of, or at least, I don't know. He stepped right into my brain and started wandering around and kicking over cans and upending rocks and things and going, what's under this? And I was like, well, we just immediately worked together in a very fun way. Like, he's helping me explore my own brain. He's helping me explore the brain that I've been exploring for such a long time. That's a long, crazy answer to that question.
That's perfect.
Hey, it works.
So, tell us a little bit about how Mr. Unpronounceable came around then. Was this kind of the character that was... Most of your comics are around Mr. Unpronounceable. Is he the main kind of figure in your world here? Is this how you kind of explore a little bit more with things like this?
Yeah. For sure. I'm actually... We Agamemnon Press is just about to... launched the Kickstarter for the Mr. Unpronounceable Omnibus, which is, it's about 650 pages of comics featuring Mr. Unpronounceable. He's definitely the main character of my, you know, solo work so far. There's definitely been some echoes of him as a character through the Painted Wastelands, and certainly what's coming up next with the next book. And there's also an RPG adventure heavily featuring Mr. Unpronounceable, written by our colleague John Leiby, who is great. And this is another thing when I think about it, when I talk about it, like it's easier than I thought it would be to sort of let other people into this sort of world. I don't know. Like, I've kept it all very in-house for so long. Mr. Unpronounceable, he's been with me for a long time. He was just one character out of many in a sort of collection of comics I started doing in my very early 20s. I was being heavily influenced by a lot of things. Like, I'd been thinking a lot about surrealism and symbolism as sort of art movements. I think I was a lot more pretentious back in those days. I sort of considered myself an artist who did comics rather than a comic artist, which is, I disavow that now. But I was very like hyper focused on, you know, I'd been reading, you know, 2000 AD, blah, 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 you know, like, a whole bunch of comic influences sort of, I think, went into it. But Mr. Unpronounceable is actually, as a character, he comes from a painting by a painter called Helnwein. He's a Austrian or German or potentially Bavarian. I've forgotten. A hyper-realist painter. There's a particular painting I got in a book of postcards. It's called The Free Spirit, and it's a guy that I basically just sort of lifted the look from, like a guy in a suit. He's really tightly wound. He's got glasses and kind of spiky hair, and he's holding a bunch of files, and it looks to me like he's about to explode. Like, he looks like the most repressed person that ever existed on the planet. And because of what's called the free spirit, of course, your brain does something, and my brain did something, and I was just like, oh, this guy should be in a comic. He should be in this weird little dream world that I'm starting to invent. And so I did the first panel, he says, hello, I'd like to introduce myself, my name is Unpronounceable. I had it changed legally, you know, and it just sort of went from there. And I, I sort of, you know, I did another story and another story, and, you know, of course I've done lots of other things in between, but yeah, he's come and gone, and I haven't, Mr. Unpronounceable's been dormant for years at a stretch, but he's back. He's back, god damn it. Yeah.
One of the main, like, parts of the Painted Wastelands that I found interesting was Dreamspeak, the different realms that kind of packed in there. Can you tell us a bit about that?
About the dream tongue, kind of the hieroglyphs and things. That is, you know, I think if I was going to be truly honest, it's probably something that I subconsciously just sort of, without really thinking about it, like, just stole from, like, Star Wars or something. you know? But, you know, like, it, the thought process behind all that is more, like, and you know, it, like, that's the joke, I guess, but it's probably true as well. But, I mean, the actual sort of front lobe thought process of it all is, you know, I've always been very interested in dreams. I've always had a very quite active and sometimes frightening and sometimes quite magical, if I'm allowed to use that word in a not just a sort of descriptive way, kind of dream life. So I've had some weird experiences that have revolved around dreams, and my mother would say that I've inherited the dream gene, because, you know, she's had some crazy experiences too. Yeah. A lot of vivid adventures, and because of that, I became interested in dreams as a thing to study in the waking world, you know. So it's always just sort of been with me. And the dream tongue, I suppose, is just my attempt to convey that. And on one hand, it's my attempt to convey that sort of experience that we all have in dreams, where it's very hard to hold on to the meaning of. You know, you very rarely, like, read things in dreams. I mean, I have, which is crazy, but more often than not, it's a sort of a shifting kind of mess of attempted communication, and to kind of hold on to try and dig into that only leads to, well, for me anyway, less coherence. But I, you know, I sort of wanted to. Because, you know, like, I've covered my comics and my drawings for 25 years with this sort of, it's, you know, it's automatic writing, you know, like, it's me letting my hand just sort of try to speak in an alien language, you know. The world itself is a place that is, it's not just a dream world, like, it's touched by the occult very heavily. So, you know, like, I'm thinking of, you know, the Lesser Key of Solomon, you know, grimoires on my, you know, I've always been very interested in all that sort of stuff. I've described myself at times as a armchair occultist. I don't dabble really, but I am very fascinated with the sort of the symbolic and how it communicates to consciousness, another thing, you know, which obviously is something that you have to think about when you're heavily mired in this nonsense, really. And again, that's really what it is as well. It's just nonsense. And I like the effect of seeing something that looks like language, which has no inherent meaning. And that's sort of something that we've taken to the next level within the Painted Wastelands and the role-playing book, and the fact that the idea is, and this is another thing that wasn't really codified in my head before Chris and I started writing together, was that, like, dream tongue itself within the context of the Painted Wastelands is, it has meaning, but it, like, the twist is that you could really kind of write any set of nonsense on the wall. It's the spell that imbues whatever that is with the meaning, you know. So that's sort of the
That kind of fits for how text.
That's sort of the idea, and that's why it's really hard to understand anything, because it doesn't have an objective. There's no alphabet, you know.
That
Sorry.
makes sense, because that's how it is trying to read in dreams. You can understand, like, you might know, oh, this book is saying history about the Roman Empire, but if you try and find out the words, oftentimes it'll just blank out.
Exactly. Yeah. So it's an attempt, at least, to sort of talk about whatever that is. I don't know.
So, branching off from art here a little bit, what is your preferred kind of medium for this? Because I know you do a lot of digital, but you also do a lot of watercolour, and I'm guessing other mediums as well. But what is your kind of preferred... If you had a choice to do one, what would you prefer doing?
I mean, for the rest of my life, like desert island disc?
Yeah, sure.
Kind of,
yeah,
what
yeah,
you're
sure.
doing?
Your supplies never run out. There you go.
Trade off.
And I don't have to consider economic factors or things like electricity.
Yeah.
Man, that makes it even harder. Preferred medium. I mean, you know, like, I mean, in my mind, there's a binary between like doing little watercolor paintings or you know, using computer software and a digital drawing board. When I'm working on either or, I always kind of crave the other. Pardon me, but I recently got a VR headset, and I've been doing like digital graffiti with it. You know, there's like an app where you're sort of inside you're in an alley, or under an under an overpass with spray paint, and it's very I think digital graffiti. It's new, it's exciting. but no, seriously, I can't answer that question. I feel like that feels like bad luck to answer that question.
It's monkey's paw, girl.
So you can have the frivolous answer.
Yeah.
I'll take it. I would love to see some of your art in the VR world. That would be a mind trip.
Well, it's fun because I've spent so much time, like there's a Mr. Unpronounceable comic, which is an underpass, and there's graffiti all over the place. You know, I drew this sort of 10 years ago, and it's so weird. Like in this VR app, my brain, you know, I don't know if you guys have messed around with virtual reality, but it really tricks your brain really, really quickly. And because I'm sort of, you know, because it's an art thing and I am just sort of making graffiti. All of the graffiti that I imagine it is like the graffiti that you would see in the city of the ever open eye. So like it's almost like I'm just having a little role playing session as a graffiti artist inside my imaginary city. And I creep myself out sometimes with it. When I first started using it, you know, sometimes it'd be 2 a.m, you know, cause I'm working on the role playing books or the comics or this and that, all that. And, we got this thing and I was just like, I'll just slip into there for a little bit. And it's 2 a.m. and the house is totally silent. And I'm hearing like the virtual birds, you know, and like footsteps, you know, and it's creepy. And I'm spray painting like giant bleeding eyes on this virtual canvas that I'm inside of. And I sort of look around. Before I understood the footsteps were coming from above because there's the bridge, I started getting really creeped out and I was looking around like, you know, you're literally looking over your shoulder, and I love that kind of thing. Like, you know, as a, it almost feels like method acting as an artist.
Yeah.
Can I tell you a weird
Go
story that I
yeah.
just
sure.
thought of?
Go for it.
About around that. So when I would have been like 23 or something. So this is a long time ago. But I was living in Auckland. I was living in a share house. You know, it was winter. There had been some experiments with psychedelics in surrounding years. And I was unemployed. No, I would have only been like 21, 22. Anyway, I was unemployed, but at the time everybody was unemployed who was an artist because the government they had something called the artist's dole or the artist's wage. So you could just be a person like me it was just unemployment, but you didn't have to look for a job for like a year. You had to do it, go on a course. It was all very beneficial. So, you know, I was staying up at night. And I was writing like a... I was doing a comic about... It was a zombie comic, you know? It was called The Death of Auden, and it was very serious and somber. And I was going out at like 3 in the morning in like the fog, in like a jacket, and just like walking around on the streets with, and I had a plastic pistol in my pocket, and I pretended that I was the character in my comic. I've never done anything like that. I've never done anything since. It was a weird time in my life. But I was, I used to walk around at 3 in the morning, just in the middle of winter, on these sort of weird sort of empty streets, and just sort of, you know, really get into it. Really get into the mind space for the writing and stuff. But I'm reminded of, I don't know who it were, like, you know, some Laurence Olivier or somebody commented on, I remember some actor commenting on some other actor who was a method actor, and the excesses that people go to sort of get into the zone. And I think the comment from, I wish I remember the name of the other actor, I think it was Dustin Hoffman. He starved himself and didn't sleep for like 7 days to act in a movie called Marathon Man, where the character did it, and the other more sort of seasoned actor just sort of said, "Have you tried acting? You know, have you tried just using your imagination?" But, you know, you must experiment.
Yeah,
I think with sometimes extreme methods.
Well, that's for off air.
So, Matt, come on.
I've got stories on my own, I can tell, but not for air.
So what programs do you use for your digital art, and what materials do you tend to use for your traditional art? Any brand recommendations?
For the digital stuff, I use Clip Studio Paint, which it used to be called, doesn't matter what it used to be called. It's called Clip Studio Paint. It's a Japanese program. Like, it's sort of built from the ground upward with manga in mind. But it's very, very handy for illustration. I don't know. Like, people still use Photoshop for illustration. They've sort of, Adobe has gone to great lengths to make their software more illustration friendly. But I don't know. Yeah, I've just been using Clip Studio for a long time. It's really good. I use it on both a Cintiq Pro with a MacBook Pro, and I just move back and forth between that and an iPad with another version of the same software. So it's very flexible in terms of whether I want to be sitting in the studio or, you know, on the couch or wherever. And for the traditional stuff, I am pretty much just doing watercolors and little watercolor pictures and ink and watercolor pictures. So I use Hoppic multiliners and Sakura Micron fine liners and a range of watercolor pigments. Sennelier is probably my favorite. I worked at an art store for a long time, and we were the reps for Sennelier in Australia, so I got a lot of it for free, which was great because it's pretty luxury watercolor stuff. But you know, whatever works. I'd love to get back into, you know, making sculptures and things. It's just not enough time.
I imagine that's quite a time-consuming process to make a sculpture of some of the bizarre and wonderful creatures that you've created, for sure. I'd love to see that, though.
It's one of those things where, like, the sometimes it stops being fun. And I think, I feel really lucky because it rarely stops being fun. But when it does, the best thing to do is just like get some clay and do something weird with it, or I don't know, go outside and do something else entirely, I suppose. But I find that hard sometimes when I'm thinking I should be working.
Fair play to you, man. Fair play to you. So you've already kind of semi touched on this with the mind enhancing trip, should we say, but what kind of roles do experimentation play in your art style? So like different techniques, different mediums, you know, other things that you've already mentioned.
Well, I mean, you know, I think I've sort of probably brought up a few things already. Yeah. Like, I tend to be more of the kind of artist who feels a lot. I feel more comfortable slowly waging a war of attrition within a particular method. At this point, you know, like I'm in my mid 40s, like it's probably not a good time to, given how long it's, you know, taken me to sort of gain some sort of proficiency in a couple of mediums, experimentation with the eye to sort of, you know, the kind of dedication that I've put into it to other mediums is something that I don't allow myself. So if I'm experimenting with different mediums, whether it's like getting some sculpey clay and doing some stuff like that, or doing some digital graffiti in VR, or I don't know, like going to the beach and, you know, drawing spirals in the sand. Those are good things to do, and they make you feel good, and they make you go, oh, okay, look, draw a spiral in the sand on the beach and then look at the stars. That's good. You should do that. But I've got work to do. I've got a lot of work to do on all these other things that I've committed to in a particular style, in a particular look, you know? So there's only so much experimentation. I think that the stuff that lights my fire sort of creatively, that keeps me going within the particular aesthetic, you know, expression is the writing and the sort of imagination of the world, you know, the worlds and the characters and the stuff that I guess it's a weird thing being like a comic artist, because you're kind of a writer and you're kind of an artist, and I think sometimes I'm better at one or the other, but I don't know, bringing it back to the Painted Wastelands, it's really wonderful to have Chris on board, because he's a really great writer who sort of, you know, has been kind enough to step into my world and sort of, you know, join me on this experimental adventure. And it's experimental in the way of like what's over the next sand dune kind of thing, you know. And then how does one capture that in words, and how does one capture that visually? Another rambling answer.
Yeah, we love the rambling answers, because it just shows more dedication to what you're thinking and what you're feeling there.
Yeah. So
I just never really know what's going to happen. I open my mouth and words come out. And
perfect. Perfect. We're not going to complain about that. Never going to complain.
So how do you know when an art piece is finished? How do you like resist the temptation to keep adding and adding and tweaking small things, particularly with digital art? That's always a struggle.
I don't know. I think about this all the time. Like, it's just intuition. It's literally just intuition, and it's my own taste, you know. I don't think it's the kind of thing. I get asked from time to time to like do like training courses and like teach people how to make art like you do, kind of thing. And I always turn them down, because, I mean, for more than one reason, but one of them is it's this question. I feel that's like a really, really, really important question. And anybody can go, oh, you know, this is how you apply paint to a bit of paper, and this is how you draw a line, or this is how you draw a head, or, you know, whatever. But we're talking about something a bit deeper. And I mean, you know, regardless of whether anything I've ever done is successful, like the time to stop is when it's time. And it's just, yeah, just, it's total intuition. Unfortunately, more than once, and indeed, like, almost frequently, you think something's finished and then it gets published, or it's on the wall at a art show, And you look at it and you go, fucking hell, I didn't color in that little bit. You know? And it's like, you know, you stare at something, you look at it close, you step back from it, and you can still end up at an art show with a painting on the wall with a tiny section of a tentacle or something, you know, just not colored in. And it boils my piss every time, I tell you.
Well, that leads on quite nicely to the next question of how do you feel about people viewing your art, whether in person or online, to such a much bigger audience?
I mean, I feel good about it. I wouldn't be doing this if I didn't like it. I think my relationship to just what the hell I think I'm doing has changed a lot as I've matured. I think I used to feel like somehow my art was gonna, you know, change the world. You know, I was very, I think a lot of certainly young men, when they're in their, I mean, that's all I can speak to, my experience being a young man in the, oh my God, the early 2000s, when I was in my early 20s, especially once you've had a few psychedelic experiences and weird things are happening to you, and especially with the kind of stuff that I've always been into, I felt like my work was a lot more, I felt like I had a part to play in some sort of grand narrative, whereas now, and because of that, it was just like, you know, this has got to, people have got to see this, you know, people have got to see this stuff, like, it's, you know, I've cracked the code. And now that I'm older, I realize how absolutely full of shit I was. Just magnificent messiah complex. And it's absolutely no wonder from where I come from and the life that I've had. But you know, the way I feel about it now is I'm glad that people find it interesting, you know, and I'm more often than not, I feel it to be very valuable, because I like to talk to people about things that interest me, which I think are the common human experience. And so the work that I do tends to allow me to meet people all over the world who sort of have similar interests and, you know, vibe with the same stuff, and I get introduced to interesting things, and I don't know. It's and I think at the bottom of everything, where I stand now, is a real deep sense of sort of gratitude that I'm in a position to sort of do what I mean, you know, who knows what the future holds, but it, you know, as it stands now, like being able to sort of make a living off making art and doing, sort of concentrating on things that interest me and stuff. Yeah, just deep gratitude.
Nice. So what is the most challenging and then the best part of me?
That's a tough question. I think if you ask that question, well, look, I mean, right now I'm in the middle of, it's been like 3 days of like resizing about 500 pages to get ready to give to our editor to sort of put the next book together. It's my old comic pages, and they're all different sizes because they've been done over like 25 years worth of work. So yeah, I don't know. Look, that's what I'm doing now. It's not challenging at all, actually. And that's, what's the problem? It's the most tedious thing I've ever done in my, no, it's not even the most tedious thing I've ever done in my whole life, but it's the kind of thing that I prefer to just sort of color in 500 pages mindlessly, because, you know, I don't really have to think about it, but, so, you know, I have to save the file here, I have to do this, I have to make it smaller, and I have, because they're all, you know, the, I find, personally, I find anything on the back end to do with editing stuff, and then God forbid getting into publishing stuff, and then God forbid paying my taxes. You know, the further I get away from the pure flame of inspiration, the less fun it is, I guess. But I don't know. I think sometimes the most challenging thing is knowing what the hell you're doing, like how to start. So I don't know. I think if you asked me that question, if I was between projects, I'd be like, wow, you know, it's coming up with that original idea. But right now I'm just sort of trying to put 25 years of stuff into some sort of order for another person to put into a PDF. So
cool.
Yeah, I don't know. It's all challenging. It's all fine as well. I don't know. Like I sort of, I think that I don't know. I've got a good method. Like I kind of know myself now. It's been long enough that, and I mean, you know, maybe that results eventually in me just sort of putting out exactly the same thing over and over and over, and then the challenge will be to do something new. So,
yeah. Yeah, fair play. I suppose the only other thing we can really ask along the lines of art is, if you weren't doing art, what would you be doing instead?
I'd like to be a billionaire and to like live on an island. If I wasn't doing art, I don't know. Like I mean, I wanted to be a fireman when I was about five. There was a period of time where I thought that I might enjoy being a psychiatrist. I thought the dreams again. I thought how interesting it would be to listen to people's dreams all day. Now that I'm older, that's my God, what a terrible experience that would be. I'm much more interested in my own dreams than other people's. I think that most people can dig that as well. But I don't know. Yeah, either a psychiatrist or a fireman or a billionaire.
Nice. Yeah, I'll argue that. It always nice to be a billionaire if you can be. Yeah. So a bit of a left field one now. What kind of games do you play in general? I mean, Painted Wastelands being a TTRPG, do you play other TTRPGs? Do you play games in general?
When I was in my early adolescence, I fell in with a group of role players. The first buddies that I made in high school were all into, what were we playing? We were playing Shadowrun, and we played Vampire the Masquerade, which was pretty cool because I had some pretty intense goth leanings when I was that age. But the one that we had the most fun with was a game called Earthdawn. I don't know if you guys know that one.
Not the foggiest.
No. It was fun. It was we played Dungeons and Dragons a few times. Earthdawn is like the world's been scoured by demons for thousands of years, and it's a cyclical thing, and everybody's been in a cave, and you're kind of rediscovering the world. And I don't know, it was fun. As we all know, it's fun to hang out with your buddies for hours and hours and make up crazy stories and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Right, that it is.
So I haven't actually been involved in anything to do with role playing until sort of not that long before Chris got in touch with me. I did some covers and some sort of illustrations for a few things, and really, you know, set my intention to sort of see if I could, you know, explore my own world through RPGs, remembering the fun times I had as a adolescent. So that was nice that all worked out. These days I play video games when I've got a chance. We've got a PlayStation.
Any favorites?
I'm not a big fan of favorite games. My most long running game that I'm still in love with. I tell you what, I haven't even sat down and played a video game in like 2 months. Yeah. So that, you know, that's the sort of, sometimes I go through periods of time where I might play some games like 3 nights a week. That's me really going hog wild. That'll only last 3 or 4 weeks. when a new game comes out that I'm really into, I got crazy during COVID. We had a very bad lockdown in Melbourne where I was living, so I played Days Gone during lockdown. I think it was fun because it was like, this is really bad, like there's a global pandemic, but at least it's not a zombie apocalypse. And it was sort of like a cozy kind of game for me. I like big, you know, games. Days Gone, Red Dead Redemption 2. I'm very like boring, you know, blah blah blah. I tend to not finish many games. I kind of get a bit bored. A game that I've been playing forever is No Man's Sky.
I don't
know if you know that one. It's like
developed in Guildford.
I like to craft my own narrative inside my head when I'm playing. So, you know, I dip back into that game sometimes and I get very into exploring, going to different planets. And what I always end up doing, though, is the thing that I've done forever in that game is, like, I jump into my spaceship and I fly around the different galaxies and I find a cool planet, usually, like, a chill, tropical kind of planet with a beach, and I set up on a cliff and I build myself a little art studio. And then I sit there and I can't stop. I have the TV on with the music, the digital waves again, and I get out my iPad and I sit on the couch and I, you know, it's like a put myself into the, imagine what kind of art would I do if I was an alien on this beach, you know. Back to the method acting, I guess.
Fair play.
I don't play card games. I've always found them kind of boring. I had some friends in the last town that we lived in who were like really, really big with board games and new fun board games. Not role playing games, but like,
Monopoly.
You know, you're all aliens in a school or something, and I don't know, whatever. And it's fun. It's always fun, but yeah, it's not
your jam.
It's not my go-to. I think when I'm hanging out with people, I just want to blather. You know, that's my. Can do away with everything else.
Fair.
I don't know. It's weird to me. I haven't played The Painted Waste.
Have you not?
Yes, that will happen.
Oh
no, I know. Isn't that weird?
Yeah,
isn't that weird? But I mean, I don't have anybody around me. We just moved to a new city, like only very recently, you know. So this all sort of happened, and I mean, there hasn't actually been any time. Like, it's just getting the stuff out, and again, like we were moving. There just wasn't any time or people. But you'd think that I'd get online because people do this stuff online,
yeah,
don't they?
Yeah, that's what we do.
People play role playing games online.
I mean, that's
crazy. It's crazy that Chris hasn't even run something. No, it's not crazy because there is no time. We're just always working.
Yeah, that's fair, man. If you're busy, you're busy. That's what it is at the end of the day.
Nobody's invited me. That's really.
Do you want to come and join
Nobody's
us?
Invited me. So maybe I could like guest star in the.
Yeah, thing. Why not? I mean, if we can organize something, I'm sure we can work something out. So, one of the very last questions we're going to ask before wrapping everything up is, what advice would you give aspiring artists?
So, this reminds me of a moment in my own life where I was in between relationships. I'd broken up with a girlfriend and I was crashing on the couch at a party house and kind of in a very liminal place and kind of, you know, a early 20s, like maybe even like 19 or something, and really kind of coming to the grips with the knowledge that childhood was over and adulthood was like really kicking in now. And I was thinking about what it was, you know, I was asking myself this question, I wish there was somebody around to give me some advice right now. What the fuck should I do? Relationship's over. I don't really know what I'm doing. Like, I think I want to be an artist. Yeah. I've wanted this the whole time, but like, what's happening? And you know, the people were gone in the house. I woke up from a party. The house was empty. I was on the couch in the detritus. I picked up a book. It was a Henry Miller book, writer from back in the day. One of his books, I think it's called the Rosy Crucifixion Trilogy. It's either Sexus, Nexus, or Plexus. One of those books. I flipped it open to the middle and read, "The reason that we weep," and I'm paraphrasing, but you know, "the reason that we weep at the lines of the old masters is because in them we realize the tender shoots of our own ambition. The same tender shoots that we allow to be trampled by other people's lack of belief and our own lack of belief in ourselves." I think he says every day we kill our darlings, or maybe I'm getting two quotes mixed up, but that quote like kind of hit me like a lightning bolt in my, you know, frontal lobe. I felt sort of, you know, it was the exact right thing. If I'd read something else, if I'd opened that book and it had said, "give up," I don't think I'd be talking to you right now. You know what I mean? Like, so it's a very, I think there's a lot of weight that comes with advice, whether to throw yourself into the abyss of creativity or not. But for me, I really got it in that moment that I didn't want to be somebody who spent my whole life like being disappointed in myself, that I didn't believe in myself enough to really give it a go. So I in an empty room, I threw the book down and I said, "Universe, I dedicate my life to art." I think, you know, I mean, that was a long time ago now, and I don't regret that decision. So I guess if you're asking me, just dedicate your life to art. If you want to be an artist, you kind of have to dedicate your life to art. And you might fail, but at least you'll have some interesting experiences if you do that. You'll go down some strange roads that you wouldn't have done otherwise. And if that sounds good, then, you know, go for it.
Oh, fair play.
But also, on a practical note, do something that a robot can't do, like, you know, watercolors. But I mean,
yet.
You know, you'll be doing watercolors soon. So.
Fair play. I mean, well, the last thing we have to ask is, where can people find you? Where's the best outlooks to kind of like reach out to you or just see some of your amazing artwork?
Oh, well, and you know, thank you for your kind words. You can find me on timalloy.com, which is probably the easiest one to remember. I assume you'll have some links.
All links in description. I hope.
Timalloy.com, my Instagram, which is timalloyart. What you really want to do is go to Agamemnon Press, which is where all of the Painted Wasteland stuff is happening. Type in Mr. Unpronounceable Kickstarter and jump on the Kickstarter. We're going to be putting this book out soon. And if you're already interested in the stuff that we're doing in the role playing sphere, that book is kind of like the source material for the deep weirdness that runs through everything. But you can just type my name into the internet with the word art, and you'll find me. You'll find stuff.
Fair play. Well, thank you very much for the time you've given us. It's been an absolute pleasure to have you on. I know
the time differences
are completely wacko. And again, thank you for persevering with us and actually helping us find time we can sit down and talk. Because it's a 9-hour difference in time. That's
I still don't understand it. It freaks me out, man. I don't want to talk about it.
I mean, it's just gone lunchtime here.
Something's not right.
Thank you very much. As I say, all links will be in description. If there's anything you think of that you haven't mentioned, let me know. We'll put it in. But yeah, this has been a Pilot Cthulhu signing off. Thank you very much, and goodbye, ladies and gentlemen.